Ladies and gentlemen, you are about to witness some scenes from the next attraction to play this theater. This picture, truly one of the most unusual ever filmed, contains scenes which under no circumstances should be viewed by anyone with a heart condition or anyone who is easily upset. We urgently recommend that if you are such a person or the parent of a young or impressionable child now in attendance, that you and the child leave the auditorium for the next 90 seconds.
Good evening, drive-in mutants everywhere. Welcome to another episode of the Video Nasty Project. Tonight, we're watching a pretentious art house film. Wait a minute, I said that wrong.
Eh bien, faites le geste. Après tout.
Tonight, we're watching Bloodlust, a.k.a. Mosquito the Rapist. Is it as good as Possession? Let's find out after we watch the trailer.
This couple is in a motion picture theater getting the scare of their lives. They are watching a film that demands the strongest nerves. Can you take it? Only life could have written this gruesome story. A picture that will haunt your nightmares for years to come. The human mind, your mind, is capable of horrors you never imagined possible. It is a film you owe it to yourself to see, but only if you can take it.
And welcome back, where we just got done seeing Mosquito the Rapist, a.k.a. Bloodlust, which is why we're up in the B's and not down in the M's. The movie's a little bit of a misnomer because he doesn't really rape anybody.
He's more like a vampire than a mosquito. I mean, yes, he does suck blood, but I might remind everybody that the weapon of choice is more like Nosferatu teeth rather than just a single-pointed thing. So I kept thinking vampire.
The movie really is a cross between, like, Martin and Necromantic.
This movie actually precedes Martin in the manner of a bloodletter who doesn't use fangs per se, but uses a weapon to get the blood out.
But thematically very similar.
Yeah.
So, let's tell them a little bit about it. So, you have... Well, he doesn't really have a name. None of the characters have any names. And usually when we say that, we're being a little bit facetious. In this instance, they're actually... None of the characters have any names. aside from Mosquito, and that's more of an alias than a actual name. So you have the man, we'll just call him Mosquito for the purposes of the review. And he, when he was younger, had a very abusive and drunk and nasty father. We catch up with his backstory when he's having a session with his dad, who's showing him the back of his hand. And then his little sister, probably about 8 years old or so, comes in, and daddy, all of a sudden, he starts getting horny because there's a female in his orbit, and starts molesting and fondling and doing a number on her.
And it's revealed later that he was beaten so badly that he went deaf as a result.
Yeah, so he's mute and he's deaf.
It's Tommy, but with rape and murder, or potential rape and murder.
We catch up with Mosquito when he's 20, 25 down the road. And he has a banker's job, and he is trying to interact with society. But society basically is taking a big old shit on him.
He's mostly ignored by everyone. He's teased by his coworkers.
And yeah, he doesn't really click with the rest of the world.
And he has an infatuation with a woman who is potentially mentally ill or just high all the time. I couldn't figure out which.
I took her to be more an innocent soul than a high or deranged or broken. She was just, I'm a hippie, I love the world, I'm going to go love the world.
Kind of a bon vivant, life is good type.
Yeah. Yeah. Which, Mosquito doesn't have a good sexual relationship with, like, anybody. He doesn't have a good idea of what sex. He's very immature. So him latching on to the hippie girl, an innocent soul, makes a lot of sense.
And he's perpetually fed upon by prostitutes who want to sex him up, and he doesn't know what the hell to do. He keeps a collection of baby dolls in his room at home, and when he is approached by these prostitutes, one of them takes him to her room and tries to get it on with them, and he can't do it, and she basically kicks him out. And he, every time he does something bad or something bad happens to him, he goes home and breaks one of the dolls.
What he wants to do with the prostitutes is he wants to go snuggle with him. He just wants to be held by a woman, and she's all like, you know, hey, if we're not going to fuck, get the fuck out of here, and off he goes.
Yeah, she lies down on the bed, and he lies down with his head on her chest and just lies holding her.
It's like, dude, you're being paid regardless of your fucking or your cuddling. Why not give the John what he wants?
I believe his doll fetish was kicked off when he had the doll belonging to either that woman he's in love with or his sister. He's on the rooftop of this house and drops it. It lands on the ground, shattering into 100 pieces. And to me, this represented his psyche taking the plunge and taking maybe victims.
He and his doll fixation is obviously comes from his childhood, and his sister, the one that got molested, when she comes in and we see the flashback, she's got a doll and she drops it during the intercourse, and father just stomps the hell out of it. So obviously his neuroses and his fixation with the dolls springs from that.
Mm-hmm.
And I suspect what he does is he sees the corpses as an extension of those dolls.
Blood fetishists have a deep connection, you know, sometimes to their victims or to just the blood itself. They don't just suck blood. They have a need. And this man is clearly, his needs are not met in general.
That's one of the problems that I have with the movie, in that making your lead character basically not communicative, you don't get a lot of reason why he's doing what he's doing. I don't necessarily need everything spoon-fed to me, and I don't necessarily need everything laid out in front of me, but there's not really any way to say, okay, this is why it's happening, other than an inference from the flashback.
Well, there is one telling bit. He's working, he's writing, and he has his ink bottle out in front of him. And one of his coworkers knocks it over. Well, it's red ink. It gets all over his ledger. And he starts putting it on himself.
Yeah.
And so that's starting the downhill spiral with the bloodletting, because he's really starting to see the connection between anything in that vein that looks blood-like starts applying it to himself, to where he later smears blood all over his face after taking out a couple of victims, and looks like a vampire that's just fed. And he has this look on his face of pure ecstasy and superiority over his victims, who were not dead at the time.
There's one scene towards the end of the movie where you do get a little bit of insight into his head, where after the hippie girl dies and his last link to humanity is severed, and Mosquito starts going around the bend and he starts getting more and more progressively worse, eventually to the point where he is kills actual live people as opposed to just kind of preying on corpses. And then as he is about to go kill the couple that are necking in the car, he's having this internal flashback of him chasing the hippie girl through the woods. And it's very innocent, and he seems to be at peace, almost like this is bringing him contentment.
Mm-hmm. Although you have to contrast that with the scene preceding that, where the hippie chick gets buried. Actually, she isn't even buried. The coffin's lowered into the ground. Everybody goes away. He steps out of nowhere, gets down in there, takes her out, sucks her blood with his pipette, then pulls her out and puts her on bench where I think he sucked her blood out after he took her out. He thrusts her onto the bench. She's stiff as a board. He sucks her blood, then he leaves her there.
Well,
but I completely lost any connection with this character once he did that.
I thought even at his most monstrous, I still had sympathy for the character. It's a very well acted role. He very much manages to sell his empathy and his terrible life through nothing but his body language and his facial expressions. And I thought it was really well done that he was able to generate all the sympathy in me with pretty much no tools in his arsenal. And that kind of plays into having all the secondary characters of the movie. None of the characters have any names, they have no personality, they have no character traits other than purposely antagonizing Mosquito. And his deafness and his muteness kind of keeps everything at bay.
Mm-hmm.
And not having any characters for the viewer to latch onto kind of helps force you into Mosquito's role.
I think part of the not naming any of the characters is sort of symbolic of his disassociation with the rest of the world. He's only halfway in it. The other half of him is with his dolls and his blood fetish.
The only person that he has any actual legitimate human connection to is the hippie girl.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody else, he is detached and held at arm's length.
I think that a lot of the movie's narrative thrust, as it were, is kind of aiming itself at him not only as a victim, but also an observer. And that's when he latches onto the idea of chasing down this couple, when he notices them being friendly with each other in their car, follows them to this wooded area with this clearing, and observes them from a distance as a voyeur.
Mm-hmm.
And doesn't do anything until they start getting it on in that kind of 70s, sex equals death thing. I mean, he goes right up to the car, looks in the windows from all sides. I'm thinking, this motherfucker is a creepy-ass Chester. And then, of course, he gets in there and starts, and he clobbers the guy with one of his weapons, and then he kills the woman, sucks the blood from both of them, and is satisfied with his work. He has this smile on his face like, haha, you know, you might have had something special, but now I have it. You don't have it anymore because you're dead.
So I thought it was interesting that when you watched it, you had the English language turned off and it was set to like German or something. You don't really need any of the dialogue. You don't really need any going on to follow the story.
No, it's pretty cut and dry. It's a very standard type of plot. And it falls into that thing that Steven Spielberg said about great movies. If you can watch a movie with the sound off and understand it, it's a really good movie.
And I wouldn't necessarily even say that it was such a standard movie that you could just kind of follow the dots. I think it was that the movie was painted with broad enough strokes that you could follow along and not be a native speaker.
I could have figured out everything without any dialogue at all. In fact, it would have been an interesting film as a silent film.
So let's get into the technical aspects of the movie, since we've pretty much covered the themes of the movie, with the extensive themes of the movie.
The music was very well done. Now, there were a lot of sequences where it was very odd, discordant music, but I thought that was deliberate.
Oh, it was almost certainly deliberate. Basically, when Mosquito is tripping out or going and sucking blood from the corpses, the music is basically the composer banging on a keyboard somewhere.
Mm-hmm. But when he's more normal, it's actually pretty nice music and pretty well done.
Yeah, and I liked the cinematography in this. Really well shot, really well composed shots, especially given the budget was so low.
One technical aspect of the movie that I didn't like was the effects.
Yeah.
Now, the problem that the director did was that when Tom Savini slashes off somebody's head, the easiest way to cover up the seams of the latex or that it's a fake head by quick cuts. This movie is long, slow, lingering shots of Mosquito with his straight razor slowly sawing somebody's head off, which is great for mood and tone, but it pulls back the curtain on the, oh, that's just obviously a fake latex head.
And the blood they used was the typical kind of Roscoe blood or 3M. It had that more orangish, slightly orangish tint to it. Orange red, as opposed to like the more realistic stuff they used later.
The tempera paint color that we always see in these movies.
Yeah, it's very jarring. And when you contrast that with a lot of movies that used blood sparingly, this one does not use it sparingly. It lingers on it.
Yeah,
he splashes it around. He sucks it. You know, they accent the sucking with that pipette noise.
One thing about the scene where he was sawing off the corpse's head with a straight razor, he went through that neck way too quick.
Yeah, that was either a hella sharp razor or that head was barely hanging on.
Because when you're going through the flesh is one thing, but when you hit the spine, that's a lot of work.
Bone, tenue, sinews. Yeah, no, it's... You know, I'm just going to just excuse this movie as this kind of weird fever dream, all told from Mosquito's point of view, so it doesn't really have any basis in reality, because he has no basis in reality.
This is pretty much on the level of a Herschel Gordon Lewis movie. You know, you can kind of take it or leave it with the seriousness.
It's not nearly tawdry enough to be a Herschel Gordon Lewis movie.
It's not nasty enough, but it does have that kind of disconnect from reality like Wizard of Gore.
Yeah. Another thing that I particularly liked was the acting. I thought the acting was really spot on for all the characters.
Yeah, even the secondary characters that you don't get a lot of information on and really don't have any development beyond, you're a prick. Were really well done.
I mean, you've got the office workers who continually just pester him, come over to his desk, make fun of him, and knock over his ink bottle.
Occasionally the boss says, hey, leave him alone, but that's it.
But really doesn't do much in the way of exerting authority in his office to these people. So that, I mean, that isolates the character even more when the boss does a little but not enough, so the shenanigans continue.
With the exception of a few of his neighbors, there is no interaction with any other character at all, except a weird, completely nonverbal interaction with that one guard at the one mausoleum.
Well, and those prostitutes who drift in and out of his life here and there.
They're not as well defined.
No, but they do try to get him in a way. They obviously consider him a thing, whereas, you know, he could have been completely ignored. They try to get him laid. And very quickly, too, I might add, the first time.
Well, that's part of their job.
You know, it is,
they've been paid, but...
That woman literally grabbed him and dragged him up to her boudoir to get it on. You know, would not take no for an answer. Very aggressive prostitute.
And he's been there before, because there's that one prostitute who say, oh, yeah, I know that guy. Yeah, he's a little weird. But the money's good, so I fuck him.
That brings up a good point. At what point does his mind start to deteriorate where he becomes this monster? Was he thinking about sex and having sex before the events of this movie, if that's what this prostitute is saying? Or was he fantasizing she was saying it in his mind and then going up and the reality is he can't get it on? Or did he start thinking about his sister in relation to these loose women and thinking about what destroyed her being the father, and men are generally pimps that deal with prostitutes, and maybe this ginned up that sort of connection in his mind?
The point that you made about not getting into the character's head so readily because of the lack of dialogue or a lack of voiceover or what have you is a good one, because in the Mosquito's case, it would be a little bit more helpful to figure out when he started going crazy.
I think he was broken from the get-go. I think where he went crazy was that flashback where Daddy was diddling daughter and slapping the son around. Mm-hmm. That's where, bye-bye, the train left the station.
Now, that was triggered by his treatment in the office by those co-workers. And then it went to his dad bullying him, pushing him around, slapping him occasionally, and then ramping it up.
Well, also, there was the incident early on where he intervenes with one of his neighbors, where one of the neighbor's men is drunk and is beating his son, and he and the two women intervene and try to get him to stop.
And that pretty much contributes to the flashback.
And that right there is proof positive that the entire town is a bunch of shitheels. They don't like anything or anyone.
At least the men. We don't know about the women. Some of the women seem decent. But, yeah, you're right.
Man, what is it with Europeans?
Jesus. So, final thoughts? Any final thoughts?
I'd need to watch it again just to study it, just to find out the things I missed.
See, I have no interest in watching this again.
Yeah, watching this movie again, not going to happen. Not anytime soon.
I wouldn't own it, but I do study things occasionally, even if they're things I don't like, just to gain perspective.
That's perfectly fair. I do that.
All right, then.
Okay, then.
So, you're the policeman. Would you seize and destroy Mosquito the Rapist? Or would you let the shopkeeper keep the tape?
I wouldn't have it seized. I would let the shopkeeper keep it. It's disturbing. It's dark. It's got some very unpleasant subject matter. But on the other hand, it's definitely kind of tame by modern standards.
All right, so you'd let it go. All right, would you seize it or would you let it go?
Given today's standards, I wouldn't seize it, only because, as mentioned before, there are a lot worse things. Even the tone and subject matter going into overdrive merely sickened, but I don't think it would ever change society.
I'm going to go with, yes, I would absolutely, hell, this movie, I wouldn't seize or destroy. I would put this on the list proper. I would put this on the 39 list, because in the first 5 minutes of the movie, you get on-screen, unsimulated, actual pedophilia. That's bullshit. That movie gets on the list, on the 39.
I don't know. That's a hard judgment call, even with today's standards, because of the proliferation of such nastiness on YouTube and other places that you can see similar stuff from other countries. And I gotta say, the pedophilia part is relatively tame by comparison to some other stuff that's been displayed of similar type.
Oh, you compare it to, like, Sweetback's song and the 5 minutes where Mario Van Peebles is having sex with, and he's only 11 at the time.
Mm-hmm.
Compared to that, this is nothing.
Yeah, and they don't actually do any penetration. It's the hand on the girl's ass, and then she faints and falls to the floor. Now, that's disturbing, but there's no actual penetration. But it all boils down to intent more than anything.
Yeah.
Is the intent to sicken, or is it to inform? In this case, it's background for the character.
Yeah, it's establishing where he came from and how broken he is down the road.
I mean, I can understand if you want to ban it, and I wouldn't disagree.
So if you're looking for a movie that has blood and breasts and beasts in it, this is not for you. However, if you're wanting a nihilist, pretentious art house film, you've got the right movie.
So did we like it?
It is a very well-constructed movie. It is very well shot. I liked the acting. I think there's a lot to recommend in this movie, but it's very nihilist and it's very, very repetitive.
I enjoyed it technically. I enjoyed the music, even though there were many parts of the music being rather discordant and weird, I thought that that was kind of fitting. The cinematography was good. The acting was spot on. It was a good, well-thought-out story. The writing was solid. However, it's very disturbing.
So let me qualify my approval of the movie by saying that it's not a movie that I'm going to read for pleasure because it's so disturbing and dark and nihilist and bleak.
I don't want to watch this movie again. Even though I enjoyed it, I still don't want to see it ever.
So did you like it?
Yeah, I'm a solid meh. I can take it or leave it. I saw it in German. A lot of stuff is out of context for me. I didn't get any of the dialogue, obviously, because I don't speak German. So I would watch it again now that I know what's going on, only to solidify whatever opinion I have right now, so that I can understand it better, basically. But I wouldn't do it for pleasure. There's no pleasure to be had in this thing. It's as dreary as they come.
So it's mostly the subject matter that gets you for them.
Yeah, I wasn't in love with it, but the visual aesthetics and the acting were good.
So if you're looking for a movie that is a very slow burn, that's more of a meditation on relationships and abuse, then this movie is up your alley. But if you're looking for just some titties and some blood and some monsters, you're in the wrong neighborhood, pal.
I would give it a thumbs up, but a very weak thumbs up.
So we'll catch you next week.
Ich, not Berliner.
I am not a jelly donut.
Yeah.
Yes.
Salt. A pinch of salt, a touch of Parmesan grated cheese, mozzarella cheese, a little oregano, and into the oven it goes. Presto, a delicious pizza. So what'll it be, folks? Cheese or sausage? Enjoy some delicious Tolona pizza now.
And thus endeth Bloodlust. Now, I can't promise that there won't be another pretentious art house film down the road, but I can promise you that next week is a weird one because we've got Frankie Avalon. Yeah, the guy who did all of the beach movies with Annette Funicello back in the 50s, he's in a horror movie. What the fuck is up with that? So, tell us how many times you've seen Beach Blank and Bingo by dropping us an email, thevideonastyproject@gmail.com, and we'll catch you next week. All right, stay evil.
When you broads have been around as long as I have, you'll be grateful some of them come along just for the view.
Well, there's plenty of you to look at.